Welcome to MGO Podcast 7.16. We talk Nebraska ball and recruiting, and mostly recruiting, but also Nebraska ball. And there's a hockey bit in, despite the hockey team not even playing, so I think I'm very proud of the fact that we managed to do that. Ace, how you doing?
I'm doing all right, Brian.
Are you taping? Okay. Do you want to keep that? This is a good podcast.
This is a great podcast.
We know how to start them, and we don't know how to start anything.
Nope.
We've
only been doing this for like 5 years.
We're kind of like Nebraska basketball in this juncture, at the beginning of a 20-minute period of basketball.
Yes, just have no idea how to handle that.
We would like to thank our sponsors, Underground Printing and Moe's, Homeshore Lending, the Alumni Association of the University of Michigan, the residents in Ann Arbor downtown, and Ann Arbor Elder Law. Patronize all of these places, or our podcast will sink into the waves. Michigan comes up with a solid road win when they were a KenPom underdog against a Nebraska team that just beat a near full-strength Michigan State on the road at the Breslin's. Michigan goes to Lincoln and they get a W. And even though it was frustrating at times.
Certainly. There were some skip passes that I questioned.
Even though it was frustrating at times, that's a good win, especially without Kara Silver.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much any time you're getting a road conference win and it's not against Rutgers, something that's pretty deep. And then Nebraska had won 4 games in a row, and one of them was actually against. And we got to see Derek Walton have probably his best game of the season, I would say. And, you know, once you account for competition, he was getting to the basket. Even though he wasn't necessarily shooting, he was driving and kicking a fair amount and had 10 defensive rebounds because he's Derek Walton.
Yeah, that's just how he do.
And helped close out the game at the line, and he was just running the offense in a way that we haven't necessarily seen him do.
Yes, except for those skip passes towards the end of the game where it's like, what are you doing? There were two really bad Walton
Terrible ideas.
And then there were a couple of, I think Duncan Robinson got stripped, and then there was a bad and one. Michigan sent a lot of guys to the line for and one in this game, and that was...
The one where Robinson got stripped and Irvin just kind of stood there and semi-undercut a guy without even really going for the block, and it was...
Right,
just get out of the way, man.
He decided to get out of the way, and then he did not successfully do so, which is not a good foul.
No, it's not.
But other than that, on the defensive end, Irvin pretty much shut down Siobhan Shields. I mean, Shields got some points here and there, but he didn't shoot efficiently at all.
No, he was 4 for 11 from the field.
Yeah, and that's after we saw him just tear Michigan State to bits. And in a way that I watched that game and I was like, he's going to go for 30 against us.
Yep. Just with the way he's able to penetrate inside the arc, it just seems like the guy who was perfectly suited to destroy Michigan defense. But Irvin has been their best defender all year, I would say, and he really stepped up.
Yeah, he does. He's using his length, I think, much more effectively on both ends of the court. So last week we talked about that swooping layup that he's kind of developed into a trademark where it looks like it might get blocked, but it's like, no, Irvin has freaky long arms. One thing I liked also on defense in this game was Walton was much more of a pest. Like he was looking for steals. He was hopping and passing lanes. There was that one zone possession where he got his hand on a ball and prevented a corner three from getting off. He just seemed much more active and involved on the defensive end.
Yeah, and that Duncan Robinson was the same way a little bit. He also came away with a couple steals, and it just seemed like, I mean, it helped that Michigan was playing a little bit more zone in this game, a lot more zone in this. So jumping passing lanes was a little bit easier, but they definitely seemed to be more active. And other than, I mean, I wasn't a huge fan of the zone, especially when they brought in some of the subs who were not running it very well at all, but especially with the way Irvin was playing one-on-one on Shields. But they were quite active on that. It showed up. I mean, Nebraska only had 10 turnovers, but most of them were live ball, and those turning out pretty well for me.
And then this game and the previous game against Minnesota just kind of show you the vagaries of being a perimeter-oriented team. Minnesota is a terrible basketball team, but Michigan was in a relatively tight game largely because Duncan Robinson couldn't hit the broadside of a barn despite being left wide open.
Yeah, him going 3-for-10 from, beyond the arc.
On like a bunch of shots that were wide open that everyone thought, that's down, and they never fell.
Yeah, no,
I mean, three of them fell, but they never fell.
Yeah, and the seven that missed, it seemed like all of them were from the exact same spot and wide open, and how could that not fall? And
do you know that whenever he takes a three, like I know that shot chart you put up, and I'm like, oh, that one's from the shruggy zone. That's not going to go that well. But I think that's just low sample size.
I think it is too.
But those were not from the shruggy zone. Those were not from the crying laughing zone. They were just from a regular
fire emoji all over the place
zone, and they still didn't go down.
Yeah, and he missed a couple open, like wide open ones against Nebraska too, although he got into a little bit more of a rhythm. It helped that Walton got him a really nice transition three early on.
Yeah.
That kind of helped put him in a.
Well, also he was 3-for-7, which we should say is good.
That is fine. For him, it's disappointing. Yes. I'm getting a little worried because his 3-point percentage is starting to dip near 50.
Yes. And, so perspective.
It's at 51.5% right now.
Ugh. My, terrible.
Yeah. I guess 60 is probably out of that dream is dead.
Send him back to D3.
Go back to Williams.
We shouldn't do that. I should make clear.
Probably should clarify. That would be a bad idea.
Because Robinson is now diversifying his game a bit because he's getting overplayed on the perimeter so much. We saw him have that game Blouses dunk against Nebraska. He had a number of other cuts to the basket in that game where he either created something for himself or got the defense rotating and issuing a good shot off. And that's an important thing for him to do is that off the ball movement where he actually gets those. Cause he's 6'8", you know, like.
Yeah. It's tough to, especially if Michigan starts throwing lobs to him too.
Yes.
I mean, it's going to be tough.
There were a couple more opportunities that like, I think this one was Benny Parker was guarding him.
And they throw a bounce pass to the post. Like, no, that is the one thing that he is guaranteed to get. The bounce pass is at eye level for him.
Yes. It was a good pass. It just was like, you can't like do that with Benny Parker.
No.
He's 5'9". He can't shoot very well. So what is he on the court for? That kind of stuff. But yeah, I was like, that dude is 11 inches shorter. Up. Throw up.
Yeah. And he's the vertical blade. Let's go.
But as you see that happening, he's going to be really good at finishing those strong because he can just go dunk them.
Yeah. I mean,
he got up for that dunk a little bit. He also did a pull up on the rim, and I was waiting for the tech.
Definitely. Glad they didn't call it.
I was like, I would have been upset about that if I was a Nebraska fan, but they got some calls the other way. Let's just leave it at that. The refereeing remains inconsistent.
Big Ten refs. There was that one possession where they just couldn't even determine whose possession it was, even though it was so obvious that unless physics just are not a thing anymore, Nebraska batted the ball out of bounds.
Yeah.
It was blindingly obvious.
No. That was, there was like a over the back.
Oh, that's
over
right.
And back
I'm conflating two plays.
Yes, you are.
Yes. There was the over and back that they could not figure out and then just handed the ball to Nebraska.
Like they
after
went to,
handing the ball to Michigan.
They went to a commercial break. They came back from the commercial break and they still didn't have their shit together.
Like, they're incompetent, I think. Mm-hmm. It was not good. But and the one where a Nebraska player bats the ball out of bounds in a way that no Michigan player could have physically done.
Yeah.
Pretty poor call.
Yeah, Dockich was all over that.
He was.
Are we afraid that saying his name on the podcast?
Oh, that's going to pop up on his Twitter feed. Are
I
you
don't
kidding?
Think so.
No, he's got alerts for everything.
No, but like there's no alert that's like somebody talked about you in an audio file.
Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure.
With Dockich, I would not put it past.
Well, but I just don't think that technology exists.
If anybody has it, it's Dockich.
No, if anybody has it, it's like Google. And they, like Dockich might be an early adopter, but he's not in his basement creating this technology that will get us caught.
I don't know, man. I could see Dockich having like a tech, like just
like
a very narrow-minded passion for figuring out how to do advance the technology and knowing whenever anybody speaks his name. And that's just, that is his pet project that he works on every night.
So I want to say that like he can't do that because that's just, he's not smart enough for that. But now I'm worried that you're right.
No, I think he's doing it. I think.
Because it's a hugely difficult technical challenge.
If there's like
you.
A large satellite popping out of the Dockich household, I'm just saying. You know,
a satellite? You mean a satellite dish?
Yes, obviously.
Well, not obviously.
Well, maybe, or he launched a satellite from his house, which I would also not put past him.
We're fifth in his power rankings now.
We've moved up on the Dokic index.
I did enjoy that he the second half of the game, he said, this game isn't just for a win or a loss. It's for fifth place in my power rankings. He said that like four times. I thought it was funny every time.
It was a big deal, man.
It was a big deal. we're screwed, man. We're going to get just flamed to death on Twitter by Dokic. He's going to find this out.
We probably deserve it.
We should talk about Mark Dinal. I tried to apologize to him during a game, and the tweet didn't go through. And I was like, I don't know if that's a sign or something.
Maybe I should hold off.
Yes, but I think at this point, you know, he looks like a basketball player.
He is quite serviceable. All of a sudden,
I would leave him at serviceable because
his O rating's at like 120 in Big Ten play, and obviously a lot of that is just stuff that's generated for him.
And they're really getting back to the pick and roll stuff that they had no faith in anyone to finish.
But he's finishing them, and nobody else on the team. I mean, Wagner can do it kind of, but he's also turning the ball over quite a bit.
He is.
And
I mean, he's just a puppy right now. I think he's going to be really good as early as next year.
And Donnell has managed to like keep his turnover rate reasonable. He's hitting 62% of his shot. Yeah. And he's actually got the eighth best block rate in the Big Ten. Yeah. He's defending the rim a little bit. He had that two-block sequence against Nebraska.
Two-block sequence against Nebraska?
They credit him with two.
They did? Yeah. That was...
You know, let's call it two. Let's give him the benefit of the doubt. But he's averaging about a block a game at Big Ten play.
He had that, like, I am now Dikembe Mutombo thing against Purdue, Maryland?
Maryland. He had two, and that was a spectacular, against Suleiman and Carter.
I really wanted him to give the finger.
That would have been the greatest moment in the season of Michigan basketball, and it wouldn't have even been close.
Someone's got to be like, you got to do the finger, man.
Because it's just so out of character for him, too. It would be great.
Yes, that's exactly why,
And need that, just done out. Because like, occasionally he'll like let out like that bit of a big man bellow after he makes a basket.
Yeah,
I want to see him do that on defense.
It's only good because it would be out of character and funny. Did you watch the Michigan State game where they're dressed up like?
I couldn't.
You couldn't?
I mean, I had other plans, and I also I was at a bar and I saw the game on, and I just had to avert my eyes because those were horrible.
Well, they were doing like the ultimate Michigan State thing where they just after every basket they like fist bump and they chest bump and then they roar and then they high five. And then they have like a very complicated handshake they give each other. And it's just like, I know like Izzo just was like, you got to show some pride and practice and stuff, but don't do that. Just be basketball players instead of being like, roar.
See, I like that when you're on the road. And, you know, I think that's fine against a team like Maryland. Do that on the road. That's cool.
No.
At home, like you've already got the crowd there.
No,
like
Michigan State just does it so over the top. So over the top. I was heartened to see that there was a Maryland blogger who was like, you know what? Every time they slap the floor, we score.
They're catching on.
They are catching on. We should talk Zach Ervin. So we already kind of addressed his defense a little bit, but he's become kind of an all around excellent player like we saw at the end of last year. And now that he's got his shooting stroke back, he's never going to be a guy who just blows by you on a consistent basis, but if he gets like a half step on you from a screen, he's now capable of going to the basket. He's assisting. He's a good all around guy.
Yeah, he had a baseline drive kick out to, I believe it was Walton, and Walton was not the guy in the corner where Nebraska kind of overcommitted to a guy in the corner.
Well, that was
Ervin drove baseline.
That was Robinson.
Yeah, which
in the corner.
That does make sense.
Yes.
But to be able to locate Walton, then hit him with a pinpoint pass where he was just immediately able to catch it in shooting position and go up with it. That was one of the best plays he's made this year, I think, and just a kind of an example of how far he's come along as a player because he does not. I don't even think at the end of last year he makes that play. And over the last month, he's really, I mean, it seemed like once his shot started falling, everything, he'd already showed some signs, but now he's really confident in everything.
Yeah, and it kind of, I mean, you wonder what happens in some of those games earlier in the year where he couldn't hit the broadside of a barn and Michigan goes down to ignominious defeat. Like, if he's this version of Ervin.
The one shooting almost 50% from Big Ten play.
It's possible that we're talking about, like, getting up to a 6 seed so you don't have to play a 2 in the second round. We're probably talking about getting up to a 4 or something.
Yeah.
So, unfortunate.
Them's the breaks, I guess.
Those are the breaks. I mean, Michigan's had a couple years here of
Yeah. Come back.
Not great injury stuff. He should be back eventually. They're saying.
I think.
Well, he's not going to come back for Rutgers.
No. I mean, why would you ever do that?
I mean, if he does come back for Rutgers, it's clear that he's completely healthy.
Yes. There's no need to take a risk there, to say the least. KenPom's currently got Michigan at a 97% win probability in a conference game. The spread is 21.
Jeez.
On KenPom.
Yes. That's
where the spreads are usually pretty close.
Yeah. 21. I saw someone tweet that in an article, I think it was on SB Nation, about how if Rutgers had been in the Big Ten for its entire duration, 17 of the 28 worst team would
yes,
be Rutgers.
Yes, that was on BT Powerhouse, I think. And yeah. they are historically awful.
Good job, Jim Delaney. You are bad at making things good.
Oh, I just clicked their KenPom page and there's so much red. Just an ungodly amount of red.
All right, we should take a break because the new sellout podcast needs more segments so we can put the ads in that we have committed to these people without making them excessively long for you. Sorry. This is the MGO podcast presented by UGP and Moe's. In 1934, a salesman from Champion Sportswear walked into Moe's Sports Shop. There, he teamed up with George J. Moe to create the very first University of Michigan-branded shirt. After seeing the high demand for this product, Champion went to the other Big Ten schools with the same proposal, and the collegiate apparel industry was born. Moe's Sports Shop is celebrating 100 years of outfitting the Michigan faithful. Visit us at our original 1915 location at 711 North University, or online at 100years.moe. That's 100years.moe.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Hi, this is Matt Demarest from Homeshare Lending. By now, you've probably read about my company on MGO blog, and I wanted to introduce you to a couple of the most important people in my life, my sons Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
I'm 7 and a half.
Colby, how old are you?
I'm 5.
Okay, boys, I have 3 really important questions to ask you. Who's your favorite team?
Michigan.
Who's going to win the big game?
The Wolverines.
And if you could buy or refinance a house with any company, who would you use?
Homeshare Lending.
Good boys. Homeshare Lending, 855-6-BE-SURE. Visit us online if that works better for you. Homeshurelending.com. HomeSureLending.com. We've helped Brian, Seth, and a bunch of readers buy or refinance their homes, and we'd love to help you too. All right, only thing left to do. Boys, can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue.
Homeshare Lending, NMLS number 1161358. Again, give us a call, 855-6-BE-SURE.
Well, I know you can't work in fast food all your life, but don't sign that paper tonight. She's 10, but it's too late. Then I don't remember what I read. I don't remember what they said. I guess it doesn't matter. I guess it doesn't matter. Store. You're gonna give them all your money. Radio plays what they want you to hear. Tony, it's cool. I just don't believe it. Sell out with me, oh yeah. Sell out with me tonight. The record company's gonna give me lots of money and everything's gonna be alright.
Alright, welcome back to Aces Hockey Podcast, sponsored by Underground Printing and Moe's. Hey!
Hey, got it in there.
I did, I remembered. This is a good podcast. So, we actually don't have any hockey podcast to really talk about. Except, Michigan did play the U.S. Under-18 team National Development Program on Thursday. And it's an exhibition, it doesn't really count. Michigan does go off for 5 goals, they give up 2. So, that doesn't really mean much, except for the fact that literally 5 guys, literally a quarter of this team, that Michigan played is going to be on campus next year. So it was an interesting opportunity to scout these guys. And it's always a very strange because instead of watching Michigan play hockey, I'm watching specific hockey players play hockey, which is it's always a very like fun and interesting way to go about watching a hockey game, unless you know the puck's over there and they're just not doing it, which happens a lot.
You know, it's kind of like scouting an offensive lineman,
yeah, but
or a wide receiver.
Michigan actually had a lot of trouble getting excellent scoring chances on the national team until the third period, and I thought a lot large part of that had to do with the departure of Griffin Luce, who was a guy who's probably going to be a second round pick. He's a defenseman. He's around 6'2". I was impressed with his size, his physicalness, and his ability to move. He's a guy who I don't think you're going to see put up Werenski-like numbers on the offensive end, but as a guy who can be your number one pairing guy next to an offensive guy, I think he looked really, really good. And then he got ejected.
Great game to do that.
I got ejected. It was a really chippy game. It was insane. And a lot of the chippiness was like Michigan guys hitting or being hit by future Michigan guys. It was a little bit odd. I was like, hey, guys.
Friendly fire, dudes.
Come on. But there was some sort of scrum in the corner that I can't see, and he's getting booted out. I don't know why he got booted. But before that, I thought he had a really good game. Nick Pastajov, I'm not sure how to pronounce that. I'm sure Ace will get no doubt. He's got a younger brother who's actually a big, big-time prospect. He's maybe a mid-rounder, but I really liked what I saw from him in terms of stick handling. He had a really slick toe drag on a two-on-one that he passed over for a goal. And this team has not had a guy who can execute a two-on-one since TJ Hensick left. So
that's been a while.
It has been a while. It's driven me crazy every two-on-one because it's just like, all right, he's going to shoot. So I think he's going to be at least a second-line scoring type player. Will Lockwood looked really, really good too. I think he's got a considerable upside. And then Luke Martin is the biggest prospect in this class if you listen to NHL people. He's not eligible for the upcoming NHL draft, so he's kind of in the same situation where Werenski is, although I don't think he's accelerating. He's a guy who people project to be a top 10 pick, and I didn't get anything from him, which isn't to say that like I think he's a bad player or he's not worthy of that. It's just that for me, as a guy who's not a hockey scout, who didn't grow up watching hockey, didn't play hockey, it often takes me more than one game to get a feel for a player. It takes me half a season with some guys. So especially with a defenseman, a stay-at-home type, it's difficult for me to say much. I do think that when he and Luce were both available, Michigan had to work as hard or harder to generate scoring chances than they have against most college teams. So,
and if there aren't obvious breakdowns, then that's also a good sign, especially for, you know, Michigan.
Yes. And the thing is that this is a loaded national development. They probably have a half dozen first round. So someone mentioned the fact that they're better than Michigan State. They should be better than Michigan State.
They just have more talent.
If you like BU being good, you should be happy. They have three guys on this roster who are fantastic. I think the best guy on their entire team is Clayton Keller, who's a center who I think is just slick. So if you're a Michigan / Boston Terrier fan, you should be happy.
All two of you?
Three, maybe. Who knows? A lot of grad school overlap, maybe.
Yeah, I guess.
Possibly. Yeah. So Michigan takes on Penn State next weekend. They will not have Cutler Martin, and they will not have somebody else who got suspended, Dexter Tanks, for one game. And Michigan State, not Michigan, Penn State just lost 5-1 to Ohio State. So,
jeez.
I actually think Ohio State is coming up. When I watched that series, they didn't come off as a team that was Michigan State. Like, they were really aggressive on the forecheck. They were really aggressive on the penalty kick. They were so aggressive. And they felt like a team that made a bunch of big mistakes but was trying to be a proactive, good hockey team. You know, they took it to Michigan for big chunks of those. They couldn't keep the puck out of the net, but they did score a ton. So I think Ohio State is coming around and will be decent. I just that's bad for Michigan because you want the Big Ten to be as lopsided as possible.
Yeah, stratified.
But at this point, with basically everything else going right, for their pairwise ranking, they actually went up this weekend.
Yeah, despite RPI not playing. Beat Quinnipiac, or tied Quinnipiac, bumped them up.
But with everything else going right for Michigan's schedule, you know, that's not so important. And I think I'm moving from can they not lose enough games to actually get into the tournament with this crappy schedule to they seem relatively safe right now. And I really hesitate to say that because
once it's out there,
it's just going to go to hell and it's going to be a disaster. But that's what I said in the Ohio State series, and they still pulled out 3 points. Old fashioned points, right? 3 points, 3 points. A win and a tie is what I'm trying to say. And if that's what they're going to do against a team that I do think is much better than its record right now, I think they'll get enough wins and get into the 10, then anything can happen, especially a 10-7 game.
Totally within the realm of possibility.
I mean, this team's offense is historically, I think they're a goal per door last year.
That's impressive.
I don't think anybody has done what Michigan is doing on offense in college hockey since the Brandon Moore. So I don't know how that happened. I mean, the top line is obviously just killing it. It's I did not expect this, to say the least.
They're a fun team.
They're a slight
infuriating team.
They are. It's if they're up, they're fun. If they're not, that's what I think.
I feel like that's true of all sports teams.
Okay, yes.
Except Michigan State's hockey team, which is never fun.
Okay, yes. But, like, it's the amplitudes are much greater.
That's true.
Where it's like, you know, football team's down by a touchdown. Like, well, maybe this will turn. Michigan hockey is down by a goal. You're like, what is going on? Until they score like four times.
Yes,
and you're like, this
goals.
Is wonderful. So it's a very schizophrenic kind of thing.
But more to the good than bad, so.
Yep. All right, let's talk to Steve about, I'm sure we'll figure something out.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, a fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is Ho, H to the O-V. I used to move snowflakes by the O-Z. I guess even back then you can call me CEO of the R-O-C. Ho, fresh out the frying pan into the fire. I be the music biz number one supplier. Fly it in a piece of paper, bear my name. Got the hottest chick in the game, wearing my chain. That's right, ho, ho. Not D-O-C, but similar to them letters. No one could do it better. I check cheddar like a food inspector. My homie Strick told me, dude, finish your breakfast. So that's what I'ma do, take you back to the dude with the Lexus. Fast forward the jewels and the necklace. Let me tell you dudes what I do to protect us. Shoot at you actors like movie directors.
You're welcome in. Steve Lorenzo 24/7 right now for Inside the Crooked Blue Line. How you doing, Steve?
Good. Like Ace, I am now mentally preparing myself for February 30th. So it should be quite a finish for the Wolverines.
So let's talk about that. Over the weekend, you posted that you weren't necessarily expecting any commits from this weekend, not because kids haven't committed, but because Harbaugh wants them to announce en masse on signing day to create a pleasing media environment or whatever. This sounds like hell for my servers and Ace's fingers, but I guess it seems cool. What is going on there? What's the plan?
Sure. So, you know, going into the weekend, I know Eddie McDoom was one guy we definitely expected to verbally commit to the staff. Checked in on that, I think, yesterday, and was directly told that not to really expect any public verbal commitments and that Michigan was only accepting what they called silent commitments. Put two and two together there, got into the signing of the stars ordeal, and it sounds like that Michigan really wants to make National Signing Day.
Did you just call it an ordeal?
Yeah.
For some of us, it's going to be, okay?
It's already ingrained in my head that this is going to be an ordeal. I've already put in reservations at a local brewery here in Grand Rapids for that night. I mean, it's going to be a long, long day. But I think some people brought this to my attention. I never really, obviously hadn't covered recruiting that long, but there were some comparisons to what Bobby Bowden used to do.
Yes.
As far as making his team, the big story on National Signing Day by telling some guys to hold off and make it public on signing day to help push the program, to the forefront of the news. National Signing Day, obviously the big day where recruiting is really the number one story. Maybe in sports, really, it might be the one day of the year it is. So given the event that Michigan's putting together and given that they still have quite a bit of spots to fill, it sounds kind of feasible. I mean, a lot of the guys that they are in on are still kind of planning. We're kind of planning on announcing on signing day anyway. So it was going to be a hectic day anyway, but it may be even a little bit more hectic.
All right. Michigan has a big, big visit weekend that has just completed. As we tape this podcast, people are still on campus, so full visit reactions have not yet been issued, but you can still get a vibe from talking to people, and you guys were very much on top of it this weekend. Let's start with the New Jersey crew, Rashawn Gary. I don't think there's anything that you need to tell us about Rashawn Gary, but just reassure us that Rashawn Gary
is going to come to Michigan. Yeah,
yes, there it is. There it is.
Yeah, I mean, nothing's really changed there. Again, I mean, actions over words. He's on an unofficial, obviously the story, the kind of the big story yesterday, I think it was Todrick Hunt from NewJersey.com was the first one to break it, they're actually snowed in, until Monday. So they'll be in town again all day today and they'll leave tomorrow, which, actually is a nice, especially with Gary, because he's on an unofficial. So Michigan's contact with him can be unlimited as long as he's there on his own dime. That's great, great news. Just kind of strengthens that idea. Yeah, I mean, again, it's kind of the same story. Contenders have kind of come and fallen by the wayside, and here he is. He could have, really, you look at it, he had an official left, could have gone to Alabama this weekend for their, I think they had their national championship parade, could have gone to Clemson. He may visit one of those two schools still next weekend. My bet would probably be on Alabama, but he's decided to take an unofficial and go to Michigan for some reason. So really the same story there for me. There's no such thing as a lock, especially as the number one recruit in the country. But I did tell our readers, and I do feel this way, that not to get everyone's hopes up, but it would probably be a bigger disappointment than the Deshaun Hand recruitment if Gary did not sign with Michigan, just based on actions and the way this recruitment has played out.
Well, I wish you hadn't brought his name up right before a trip for Alabama, but there you go.
That's the fear. I mean, naturally, if he goes to Alabama next weekend, the Chicken Littles will – probably like fret all weekend, but there's not much Michigan can do about it. And
there's no probably about it.
They will. Yeah. I mean, the context of this recruitment, like he's been in contact with Alabama a little bit, but it's not like they've been there for him, right?
And with the amount of diligence that they are putting into this recruit surprise.
Like they've gone through all of this with Michigan, and sometimes the second school changes, but the one school that's always there. I think this is not the Deshaun Hand recruit because
it's not even close. Really.
This is not a Brady Hoke team.
Like, that is a big difference.
That's one part. And the other part, too, I mean, and this is to Alabama's credit, really. I mean, they were recruiting Deshaun Hand really hard, too. It wasn't a situation like, with Gary where Alabama's just kind of that fifth official that he's kind of looking to maybe make. I mean, he's a high school football player. There's a lot of reasons a kid wants to see Alabama. I mean, they're Alabama still. There's no denying that. But with Hand, Alabama recruited him really, really hard. I think his recruitment, if I remember right, was originally looked like Virginia Tech, Michigan, Alabama. He surprised everybody when Virginia Tech got wiped off the list, and then it became Michigan, Alabama. And both schools went at it for a while. So this is a way, way different. Just the parallels, I think, are just literally just because they're both the number one player in the country.
All right. Donald Stewart, a 6'3", maybe 6'4" wide receiver out of Paramus, is also on campus. For a long time, a lot of people thought it was going to be Stanford. Now, it seems to be trending a little bit back towards Michigan. You've been Michigan in his recruitment for longer than anybody else. And it seems like, given his reaction to the visits last weekend and this weekend to his two finalists, that seems like it's coming to fruition.
Yeah. So it's kind of, you know, sort of the way the crystal ball works. I had Michigan back in April. Two things that I wanted to see, knowing the whole time his plan, I think originally he had, at one point, he had planned to maybe make an early decision. Never really bought that idea. Biggest reason why is because he had a legitimate interest in Stanford, and these guys don't know if they're getting into Stanford until like two weeks ago or so, even maybe even less. I mean, some of these guys, that's why they've actually had a few guys decommit, and I think that's a big reason why. So knowing he had a late choice and knowing that Stanford and Michigan were two schools that he was really high on, kind of waited it out a little bit to see, A, if he would get into Stanford, and B, just where Michigan would have him on their priority list too, because, I mean, you guys know there's been tons of names thrown back and forth at the wide receiver spot. So it all kind of played out kind of the way I thought it might. Michigan's made him a priority late. They don't really have a 100% wide receiver of that size in this class. I know Amir Mitchell is the same size, but Amir Mitchell could also, great chance he could end up playing on the defensive side of the ball at Michigan. You know, so Stewart kind of fits that bill. I know there's other teams in the country that are real high. I know Auburn's coaches were real high on him. You know, I think this visit sort of solidified it, really. I'd be really surprised at this point now if he didn't end up choosing Michigan. You know, great camaraderie with some future teammates, the coaching staff. You know, he told us it was his best visit so far. I think he told everybody that. You know, so I think he's a guy I feel pretty safe about right now as being a guy that will commit eventually.
The other two Jersey guys on campus right now are Jordan Fuller, the cornerback / safety, who's not actually tight, I think, with the rest of the crew. he's been very quiet in his recruitment. Ohio State was thought to lead, but I don't know if he's ever actually said that.
He had said that originally and then backed off.
He did. Is there any consensus around where he might go?
No. I would guess that Ohio State still, though, despite the fact the one thing he did kind of say is that they led early, but that he kind of backed off that a little bit. That being said, I know the strong buzz after the Army game was that Ohio State was still the school that he was preferring. With him, it's going to be really interesting because, again, he probably really is the biggest visitor Michigan hosted this weekend as far as, like, this being his first, like, prolonged visit there and him being right up there with Gary, David Long, LeVert Hill as like a guy that Michigan desperately would love to add to this class. So he's a guy that they were looking to throw the kitchen sink at. I know he's enjoyed the visit. He's with them also, though. He'll be on campus for another day. I don't know exactly how the official visit situation works. Like, his official technically is over 48 hours after he arrives. So I don't know. I believe that there's, as long as he pays his own way for the rest of the time that he's there, that he can hang out with the coaches or experience the program. Michigan, Ohio State, and Notre Dame really seem to be the three schools that this is coming down to. I feel like it's going to be either Michigan or Ohio State. He's one of only a few guys in this class they've told that he could play both ways in Ann Arbor, and they legitimately mean it. I mean, I really think they see him as a guy that could play on both sides of the ball. In fact, I think they've kind of told him that he could fill a similar role as Peppers does, which again is something you might think they'd go to the well with more often, a la Urban Meyer telling about 30 wide receivers they could be the next Percy Harvin, but they really haven't. It's not something I've heard a lot on the recruiting trail. I don't know if he knows that, though, but it is something that they've been pretty adamant about and would like. Who's the other Jersey guy that we wanted to talk about?
Was Drew Singleton.
So Drew Singleton was a guy that I probably kind of incorrectly labeled this weekend as somebody who may verbal. The reason why it was incorrect wasn't necessarily because it wasn't a possibility in retrospect. It was more the idea that I actually think Michigan, because of Chris Partridge, the relationship he has with these guys, I think he's been kind of telling them, just been flat out honest with them to tell them, like, you know, you guys should experience the recruiting process a little bit more. Go out and see some schools, see what other schools have to offer and stuff like that. I still feel really good about Michigan's eventual chances there, though. I think he's right up there with like a Josh Ross type as far as top linebacker targets. A couple other guys are emerging at that spot, but I think Singleton's right up there with the top of 2017.
So McDoom's on campus and was expected to commit. Stewart is looking pretty good. Pye Young goes to Florida State this weekend. Nobody really knows if he's a take for them. And then Nate Johnson goes to Notre Dame. I don't know if they're in a similar seeming five-star receiver out of Georgia. Young and Johnson, how likely are they to end up in the class?
It's gonna be interesting. I think Pye Young is in a little bit different position because Michigan actually really looks at him as an athlete, primarily wide receiver, but as somebody who could play corner in college. That's kind of one of the things about his recruitment that's been interesting. He's always been listed as a wide receiver, but a lot of the schools that were recruiting him actually liked him at corner. I know Alabama was one for sure, and I actually think that Florida State liked him at cornerback also. So he has a little more flexibility, I think, as far as maybe being a guy they'd try to fit in. Actually, I think the Antoine Richardson decommitment, which was legitimate on our end, could open up that spot for him maybe. Not 100% sure on that, like you said, but it's gone back and forth, though, as far as him being a taker, him not. With Nate Johnson, I think it's going to depend on how they feel on McDoom and Stewart. It's going to be Notre Dame or Michigan. I know his really odd way of wanting to do this and sort of either recommit or flip on National Signing Day is kind of a peculiar way to handle this. With him, I don't know. I mean, my theory on this has been that they're going to want guys that want in, and if McDoom and Stewart want in, they may tell Johnson to maybe he'd be better off kind of looking elsewhere. But he's got Miami and Notre Dame there, though. I think if Johnson wanted to commit to Notre Dame as of this very moment, I think he could. But, yeah, Demetrius Robertson was the guy you're talking about out of Georgia. Notre Dame actually looks pretty good for him right now. So, again, if he waits too long, it'll be interesting to see how it shakes out. I wouldn't count Miami out for that very reason. Both the other two schools may not have room for him.
Two teammates came up, actually, with a third guy who's a long snapper, but let's not talk about the long snapper. Boss Tagaloa and Devin Asiasi, they've had recruitments kind of similar to that of Fuller, where they don't really talk a whole lot, and they decided to put a lot of what their decision-making process was going to be into this month of visits. You know, Michigan was thought to have a shot, but maybe an outside shot with both these guys. How's it looking in the midst of an official visit?
So it looks good. I think it was about a month ago we reported that Michigan was actually starting to trend up for both guys. Why the abrupt positive feel? I'm not really sure. I think they're just two guys that Michigan have kind of been plugging along on. And, guys who've been really, really quiet, hard to get a read on their recruitments. But guys at Michigan, yeah, just kept plugging along on, really worked to get on campus. And, Asiasi canceled an Alabama official to make it here this weekend. I think Michigan's better chance may actually be with Asiasi than Tagaloa. Tagaloa's been tied more to maybe staying closer to home, while Asiasi had Alabama, like I said, Alabama high on his list. I think Washington's up there. But Michigan was a school that both of these guys really maintained interest in because of their knowledge of Jim Harbaugh. Concord, California is right up there by San Francisco, so obviously they know what he did not only for the 49ers but at Stanford. I think that appeal is what's played a major role in both of their interests. And again, I mean, from Asiasi's standpoint, I think Michigan, you know, with what they do at the tight end position, is always going to put him in the thick for guys that they're really recruiting hard. So,
especially for a guy like Asiasi, who a lot of people regard as a defensive prospect and who apparently really wants to play tight end. If you want to be a tight end, there's a pretty obvious place to go.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I think our national guys at 24/7 actually have gone on the record as saying that they would prefer him at defensive end. But Michigan actually really does like his prospects as a tight end. I don't necessarily think they're recruiting him as an athlete. I think they like his blocking ability, his hands. He's a bigger tight end, but he's a guy, you know, they need those guys. I mean, those guys are huge in those two or three tight end sets, you know, where they like to run the ball. So, there's some real value for him in that spot. And Tagaloa is actually being more recruited as an athlete than Asiasi is. I mean, he's a guy that could play on the interior of the offensive line or the defensive line. But with the Jordan Elliott situation, you know, he may be more suited or more looked at as a potential defensive prospect.
And Elliott's just gone, right? Pretty much. That's over.
I'd be really surprised if he signed with Michigan. Like I told you guys, when he first committed to Michigan, I was told that he would end up signing with whatever school he visited last or whoever had the last in-home. Was always inclined to believe that based on the history of his recruitment. The only time I gave pause to that was when members of his immediate camp told me that this commitment to Michigan was a family decision, whereas his previous commitments were not. That's what maybe led me to believe he would end up signing with Michigan, but it's obviously not playing out that way. So, this is not necessarily a negative opinion of him, but just going back on sort of a history type look at this, guys that flip like this constantly, there's guys that flip, and it happens all the time, but when you see guys committing through 4 or 5 times during the recruiting process, a lot of times those guys don't necessarily pan out at the school that they sign with. So, again, he's a very talented player. Michigan may be dodging somewhat of a bullet if he ends up elsewhere.
Brought out to dodge a bullet.
Well, I mean, it's the truth. I mean, it's unfortunate because, like I said, he's a very, very talented player. I mean, he is a top 50, top 100 guy for sure. It's just you see it a lot with these guys that flip constantly. I know Michigan went through a similar situation with Chris Clark last year. Not saying the two are like exactly alike or that, you know, but the recruitments have played out very similar, especially when you consider just things he's said off the record to various team reporters and stuff. I mean, they're just very close to each other as far as the way they're playing out.
All right, Michigan needs another linebacker in this class, and they've led for Jonathan Jones since the Paleolithic, except he seems to be trending to Notre Dame right now. They have two more guys who could be in that vein on campus right now. I'm going to need a pronunciation from you, Ace.
LSC Bembas.
Thank you. You did it.
I'm going to do it every time.
Don't do it. The Rick Rossoff. And then Joshua Uche, who I think is probably the best-dressed recruit in this recruiting class.
An important factor.
Uche, a lot of people think, is a defensive end, but he's 6'1", 6'2", 210 pounds. Unless he does the Frank Clark thing, he could be a linebacker as well. So I'm kind of – it could go either way with him. How does Michigan look for those three guys, and who would you project ends up in this class and who does not?
Uche first. I think Michigan's really helped themselves again. They've done a great job this weekend, but this staff is really sort of like what the Brady Hoke staff was. They've done a really great job with these kids when they get on campus. There haven't really been many duds as far as official visits go. I know you're not really ever going to get somebody on the record saying they didn't have a good time, but they really have done a great job of not just selling the program, but tailoring it to individual recruits. So in that regard, I think Michigan has really helped themselves with Uche. Florida and Auburn are kind of the two programs that have been mentioned most with him. But, you know, they've all kind of come up late for him. He was committed to Miami for a while under their last staff. So all these schools have kind of come in at the same time. So it's not as if Michigan's at any disadvantage as far as, like, you know, popping in late because they did offer him. I think he's Don Brown's first recruit. That's what I'll always remember him as. He's Don Brown's first real recruit at Michigan. I actually think that's something that's a nice little advantage for them because Don Brown loves this kid's game. Again, Auburn, Florida, I think Michigan's done nothing but help themselves. Though I know I talked to Devin Bush Sr., who happens to be up in Ann Arbor this weekend, and his exact words to me were that Michigan has an excellent shot at him. So take that for what it is, but he's a guy they'll wait on for sure. EBM, as I call him, the middle linebacker out of Georgia, he's actually probably going to be the next guy I put in a crystal ball for. Michigan killed it on the in-home visit on Wednesday with Chris Partridge and Don Brown. Michigan immediately felt optimistic about their chances with him. They just wanted to get him up to campus and get him acclimated to Ann Arbor and maybe the cold. You know, he is a Georgia kid. Michigan was really the only northern-ish school that he was considering this late. Would be a real great spot to fill. The question would be is what would happen with Jones. Like you said, you talked about Jonathan Jones. Michigan's not in a position right now to wait on either Jones or Dontavius Jackson, who I pretty much have written off as being a part of this class. They're not really in a position to wait. Again, I know we talked about the signing day thing, but I don't think they're going to play a waiting game per se. I think they're going to take a silent commitment and let it be. And then that's the guy they're going to sign, and I think he's their best chance right now, actually. So maybe between him and Connor Murphy, I think of the two guys that are on campus this weekend, I think are the best shots to sign with Michigan.
Other than McDoom.
Other than McDoom, yeah, McDoom's right there too, yeah, sorry. And Stewart, actually. I mean, all four of those guys really are – but again, they have a lot of spots. They have a lot of spots to fill now. So, I mean, you know, that's not a coincidence that some guys they really want to sign were on campus this weekend. I don't really think that's a coincidence at all.
Slightly shifting gears to a guy who committed recently, Stephen Spinellis, offensive lineman out of Maryland who was committed to Virginia, has flipped. I went and I looked at his film, and, you know, I'm just a dude, right? But to me, he looked more like an interior lineman than a tackle. And we were talking about this off air. We think his commitment might change the plan for Ben Bredesen.
100%. Ben's their highest rated offensive lineman commitment. Ben is their most versatile offensive lineman commitment. I think the comparisons between Ben Bredesen and Mason Cole are excellent. I think they're very similar players in size, ability, skill. I think it was kind of interesting. You know, they've been after tackles so much, with John DeLance and I think Will Fries, the Penn State commitment. I think they put out some feelers there. Spinellis is a guy I think that they're obviously looking for inside. This guy's a road grader. I think that was the consensus on almost every scouting report we read on him. That phrase was literally written in there somewhere. He's super strong. He's actually played on the line at Gilman all 4 years he's been there. He actually played with Henry Pogge when Pogge was a senior there. Spinellis started more than a handful of games as a freshman on the offensive line. So that's another big thing. I mean, this is a guy that's used to seeing the field, which is sort of reminiscent of Mason Cole in his regard, because Mason started every high school game he ever played. I think Bredesen is sort of a guy that Michigan is really fortunate to have, because not just because he's great, great high school player, but he's very versatile. I mean, we've heard him as a potential filler at almost every spot on the line. So it kind of gave them a little bit of flexibility late to maybe step back after missing on DeLance and say, you know, let's just take the best offensive lineman we can get, and then we can work with a guy like Bredesen wherever we really need him, because he's capable of doing that. So I think that's sort of how this played out. I was a little bit surprised that Spinellis committed as quickly as he did. I kind of thought Michigan might wait it out a little bit longer and maybe put out some other feelers. I know they went and saw E.J. Price out of Georgia last week, which was it was a futile attempt. I was really even surprised that they even went down that road. But, again, I mean, they were in a position, I think, maybe they felt good about Spinellis. Maybe they figured they'd swing for the fences and see what they could do there. I think it was a great addition, and it's Gilman's never a school that you always want to have a good relationship with a school like Gilman. Even though if Posey's the head coach, I mean, they're still sending a bunch of guys all over the country. So never bad to take one from them.
A few guys visiting elsewhere this week in Hudson and Dwumfor are at Penn State, and Lavert Hill is at Michigan State. I know there was a lot of optimism about the two Penn State Penn State's also recruiting, and Hill's kind of like slipping maybe a little bit. I don't really know what to make of it. Any updates on those guys? Or are we still like looking good for all of that? Great.
I think Michigan is still looking good for all of them. Hill is obviously the big mystery, just because his recruitment's gone so up and down just in the last like 2 months. He visited Penn State last weekend, and from I think we even talked about this briefly last week, but our intel last week, he had told some people at Penn State that Michigan State wasn't really much of an option for him. He knew had too many friends down there, wasn't maybe the right fit from that perspective off the field. Never really sure I really bought that. He's obviously there. He's kind of the mystery. Michigan still feels really good about both Dwumfor and Hudson, though. Hudson, yeah, I know we talked about him a lot last week as a player Michigan really would love to add to this class. Penn State's making a late push, but really, really handicapped themselves by not letting him commit earlier in the process. So he tried to commit to Penn State at least once. They told him to hold off, and I really think that's hurting him. And Michigan capitalized on it. I mean, they did offer a little bit later, but I think they framed it the right way and have gone really, really hard after him since. And I think he ends up as part of the class. And I think Dwumfor, again, especially with the Jordan Elliott thing also, I think that makes Dwumfor and actually a real legit target for them now. Michigan, from what we found out over the last week, Michigan's kind of where Dwumfor liked, really wanted to go. I know we talked about him being at the satellite camp last week when he was at the satellite camp in Easton, Pennsylvania in June. That's because he really wanted a Michigan offer badly. These are guys that want to play at Michigan too. So my crystal ball staying on Michigan for all three of them. I've had it on Michigan for Hill forever. A lot of that's from a lack of intel and just conflicting intel. But Michigan or Michigan State for him. I think Penn State's efforts were admirable in a way, but kind of a waste of time. I don't think he's going to remit there. So we'll learn more as he heads back from East Lansing today, I'm assuming. So look for that update in the near future.
So are we working still with 30 as the number for this class, 30-ish, 28 to 30?
It's ish. It's definitely ish. There's no doubt about it. It's always ish. I mean, it'll be ish on February 2nd if they don't have the amount of guys they want, I mean, in my opinion. I had been told 27 before. That was the concrete number I was finally given after months of wondering. It's increased for sure. I think they're looking at it as, like I think I've said before, this is a lot like the 2013 class was for Brady Hoke. I mean, this class is going to be the foundation for Michigan under Harbaugh. So they want to try to get in as many guys in their style and their type as they can. So, I don't necessarily think it's going to be 30. I'd still probably say 28 or 29 before 30, but it probably won't be the 27 that I originally had either.
Well, there were a couple of events like Henry going to the draft that happened after that projection.
Go ahead.
Jake Rollerson, does he figure into that number? I mean, I know you need to give him a scholarship, but are they looking at him as more like a guy who might come in after spring if there's room, or is that like a guy who takes up a spot in the 30?
See, I've been wondering the same thing. I actually kind of think the Spinellis, even though they're separated by a couple classes, I'm less – that's one another recruitment. I think I'm less optimistic than I was the last time we talked. UCLA's there. Oregon did get in late, and he will be visiting there next week. There's still optimism on Michigan's end, as far as I think Wednesday was the last time I found or dug a little bit on him. But with him, I don't think he counts towards the 30, if I recall correctly. I'm less optimistic than I was about their chances of getting him either way. I think, it's not a zero chance by any means, but I'm just not 100% confident that it's going to happen. The players that hosted him last week were the ones that felt really optimistic about Michigan's chances, but sometimes that's not the best way to gauge, the true chances of the prospect.
All right. How's darts?
So Sky Sports actually, it's sort of like the World Series. They have like a long, like league of events from like February through May. I found out that I can purchase a subscription to it.
Are you going to buy Sky Sports specifically for darts?
Yeah, it's cheap though. Oh, it's not that expensive. I'm into it, man. I actually bought a dartboard last week.
Yes.
I'm totally into it. I already got it measured out downstairs of the distance and stuff. I just want to order the right set of darts and, it's been hectic lately with work and covering this stuff, so I haven't had the downtime to focus, but...
You're going to get a snake tattooed on your head? Is that tattoo or is it just painted?
I think it's just painted.
Oh, okay. Well, then you can do that. For signing day, maybe.
Oh, man. I'm gonna go somewhere and shoot darts on signing day. I don't know if it'll be here or at that local brewery, but I'm... that'll be my thing after signing day, though. Things kind of slow down after that. I think I'm going to hone my dart abilities and... maybe I'll be on Sky Sports here in a couple of years. So, these guys get paid mad money, too. That's, like, one of the craziest things. So they play 501 down to zero. It's, like, different legs and then sets, and then that's how you win. The ultimate score is a nine-darter. If you can score 501 in nine darts, which is just three turns, that's, like, unheard of. And these guys get 10,000 pounds if they get a nine-darter in a tournament setting, which is ridiculous. And, these guys are rolling too. I mean, they're like guys that marry way up too. You see some of the women they come out with and it's just unbelievable. Like It's crazy.
Are you? You're not a married man, are you, Steve?
No. Okay, no. Good. Not yet. No. Yeah. Right. I know. You're married. You know. That's why I'm, part of the reason why I'm going to practice. Keep practicing darts here. You know.
Yeah. Got to get that wag going.
Yeah. Move over. Exactly. That's what they are. Yeah. They, every one of them has a wag, and yeah. They. You know, it cracks me up though. I mean, how easy is it? All these guys do is just go to the board. I mean, it's not even like physically exhausting, or I can't imagine it's physically exhausting. And they're rolling in dough, and they got wags.
Yeah, you really can't. The training montage for a darts movie isn't that impressive. It's just he throws the dart at the board, then he goes back gets the darts.
That's really all they do though. I mean, like, you know, they got a guy that counts the score for them, but in the tournament they're just shooting. Picking them up off the board. The only time like controversy ensues is like if a guy picks his darts up off the board and he like walks too close to his competitor as he's like walking back to wait for his turn again. 1999, there was a big incident. No, I'm just kidding.
I was totally ready.
You had me too. I was like, probably just looked it up on Wikipedia.
I was about to make up some names and go with that there, but no, I mean, I'm still on it though. It's still entertaining.
To be honest,
I thought it might be a phase for a short time, but I think it's past phase. It's past phase here.
To be honest, I thought I was going to ask you that and you're going to be like, I got over it.
It has moved from phase to passion.
But no, yeah, this
nope.
is.
Yeah.
Hey, man, I was an engineer in school. I don't do that anymore. So you could be a darts person. Dare to dream.
It's in between faith and passion.
All right, Steve. Always great to talk to you. And we will definitely have you on for our signing day podcast, which will probably happen not on signing day, but the immediately proximate podcast. All right. This has been Inside the Crooked Blue Line with Steve Lorenz.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I am Ace Ambender, along with Brian Cook. Send rations.
Better than us.
Nobody.
Damn you, darts Twitter.